Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast. This is the AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing,
Hello.
Emily?
I'm good. Yep. I am recovered finally from that crazy trip to Norman, Oklahoma, and all the driving. I don't think I told you, but we flew into Dallas Friday night and then stayed in Pottsboro, Texas, drove to Norman in the morning for an 11 a.m. kick, and then drove back to Dallas after the game. And that's...
And is that the most efficient way to do that?
For the No, probably not, but it is very hard to get to Norman and fly in there and stay there and stuff. So we figured having a car would be better for an 11 a.m. kick, because then we'd be in control of what time we could get there and everything. But first game of the season, learning curve. So next weekend will be smoother, but I'm finally caught up with my sleep. So
yeah, and I think I saw on Twitter you're going to Ohio State, Oregon next weekend.
Yes, another challenging place, because Columbus also not easy to get to, but we're working on it. We're very excited.
Columbus though. Doesn't have an airport.
It does, but it's small.
Okay,
and
so the flight.
Yeah. So for me, it's not hard, but the girl that I work with, Kim Montoro, she comes from New Jersey, so mm-hmm. we are like trying to. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yes. But ready to talk some AAC for this week.
Okay, yes. We have our week two previews mm-hmm. on tap for all 11 AAC games. It was a rough week one for the conference. It was. I just saw a stat before we started recording that of the teams that are going to be in the conference after this realignment thing that's been mm-hmm. widely reported takes over, not one of those teams beat an FBS school in week one that's remaining. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Memphis and SMU who beat FCS schools. You didn't have anyone beat an FBS school. That's not a great look for a conference that's kind of in a little bit of turmoil overall, just because of, yeah, I know. And as we record, Houston earlier today officially, I believe, applied for Big 12 membership. And that, like I said on our last podcast, all that's supposed to be accepted by Friday the 10th. Not what we're talking about today, though. I'm sure I'll write something about it at some point. We're talking about how I did a little bit better than you on our week.
Yes.
8-3. You were 6-5. This is what you get for going bold and taking Tulane.
I know. I'm upset. I told some people to my boyfriend to bet on Tulane and San Jose State over USC, and neither of those panned out. So feeling not great.
If you bet Tulane to cover, he would have been fine though, I think.
I just told it. I mean, I don't understand how betting works, and I never ever gamble, but I was like, I always tell just like pick this team over that team. I think it's called straight up. You just pick
that team. Like money line.
I was just like, do it. And then they almost, to be fair, they were less than a yard away from like, you know, him winning big money, but
no, Tulane played a great game that game.
So
I made the safe pick, and you know what? It worked out.
It worked out for you, but one of these days it'll work out for me. So
we'll stick with this plan for right now. We got a lot of games to get to. So let's start with one that I think is really, really interesting for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's South Carolina at ECU. They're traveling to the Pirates, and that in itself is always something that we like to see, is the SEC school coming to us.
Yeah.
But what else is interesting is you just talked about how you don't 100% understand betting. Vegas has ECU as the favorite in this game. Not by a lot, but by enough where they're the favorite in this game.
How many points?
I believe the line started at like 1.5 and went up to 4.5.
Wow.
Which is basically a pick 'em, but they're the home team. But it doesn't matter to me. They're the favorite. And that, I think, is really surprising given who ECU has been the past 5 years or so. Unfortunately, we've talked about they might take improvements and strides every year. They're still not really winning games consistently. They just lost by 14 points to open mm-hmm. the year. In South Carolina, obviously, is an SEC school. Usually they get the benefit of the doubt in that kind of regard, but I'm interested by it. I think the most interesting on the field aspect does come from South Carolina. Who's their quarterback going to be? Is it still mm-hmm. the grad assistant, or do they actually have a little bit of a better situation there?
That was such a fun So that was like, I loved this weekend, last weekend of college football, because where do you ever get storylines like that?
Oh, it's so silly. The silly thing. And his first name's like Zeb. So, you know, why not? No. And if they're healthier at quarterback, you'd assume that they're better, but he played pretty well. I know it was an FCS game against Eastern Illinois last week, but you'd assume that a healthier quarterback room is what you're looking for if you're the Gamecocks.
Yeah.
Do you think that that kind of Vegas expectation that ECU should be the favorite, even if it's only by a point or so, is accurate?
I don't understand gambling and lines and betting. Okay.
So like, let me put you this way. Currently, the people who are paid money to decide what the spread, how big a difference, and will lose money if they get it wrong, think ECU is going to win by about a point.
Mm-hmm.
So they expect to be like 21-20.
Yeah, well, I'm picking ECU to win again. So like, yeah, I do think it's wrong because I think ECU's
gonna win. Then you think it's correct.
Okay, but you said by a point.
They're going to win by a point is what the Vegas line is saying.
I think they're going to win by one point. How do you, like?
That's all. But this is how. So when you.
That's what I'm saying is I don't
know. No, but okay. So this is going to turn into a gambling podcast really quickly. But
because I don't understand.
At the most basic, if you see a team is -3.5, that means they're a 3.5 point favorite.
Right.
So when you see a score at the end of the game, you subtract 3.5 points off their score. So for instance, if that's 24-21 is the final, you subtract 3.5. Now they've got 20.5. That means they did not cover on that game. It means that the team that lost won money on that bet.
That's just so much effort to think about
how many points a team is
going to score. I have no idea how many points either team is going to score.
Anyways, what they're saying right now is ECU will probably win by a little bit. You'd be betting on ECU to win and cover.
Okay.
Not just one.
I mean, I just think they're going to win. And you know what? I don't want to jinx them and be wrong again, but I feel like that home, you know, you shake off the first game, which wasn't great, but like you said in the last podcast, there were some promising things that you saw that were better. And I think that's Mike Houston's MO is like every time you see him come out with this team, it's going to be a little bit better. I don't think we're going to see it regress, you know, at all. And even, you know, South Carolina coach was talking about the team yesterday or today, and he's talking about the things he threw out the App State game. He's like, we're not going based on that game. We're going to go based on the last game that we saw them play, which was the can't remember the game that they played before. Oh, SMU, when they beat SMU at the end of last year.
Yeah, they jumped SMU pretty good in last season. Yeah. It was like a 40-point first half from ECU in that game.
Exactly. So Shane Beamer said, you know, that's the game that we're going to look at for this team instead of, you know, the App State game.
The other thing to remember about the App State game is that even though they weren't themselves last year, App State's a pretty much perennially top 25 program at this point from the Sun Belt. So like they're a good team. There's no shame in losing to App State. I think I picked App State to win that game. I don't think that was the most surprising thing ever. I can't remember 100%, but
yeah.
You know, and I am high on the Pirates this year, and I did think their defense made a lot of improvements.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that South Carolina's going to have as good a running back tandem as App State did.
Right.
App State has a really good running back tandem. What really, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, ECU needs Holton Ahlers to be consistent. Yeah.
No, I knew you were going to say
that. he just can't be a 50% completion percentage guy. He needs to be closer to 60 at this point in his career. You know, I mean, just a couple more completions is all the difference in the world. The running game for ECU is very young. If they can get a little bit more than they got last week, I think they're in good shape.
Well, what's funny about Holton Ahlers, however you say his last name, I can't even.
Ahlers,
Ahlers, that's what it looks like, but I want to pronounce the L differently, is that Beamer said that they recruited him at Georgia when he was at Georgia and went to some play, you know, a bunch. So the funny thing about that is Beamer's very familiar with this kid and how he plays and what he does. So
he's a little bit like Tim Tebow playing. And a lot of why he went to ECU is because he's from Greenville. He's got great ties there. His dad does the PA at the stadium.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, like he went to ECU because he loves it. And I love that he's there at ECU. It's a great story. I just want him to win there. You know?
Well, hopefully he'll feel a little more comfortable with this home game. You get the atmosphere back in Greenville. You get that home game. So I think we're going to see like night and day between the team we saw last weekend and this team. So I'm going to pick ECU.
I'm going to ECU too.
Oh, okay.
I like ECU this year. I've stuck with that. I've also said they need to go 2-2 out of conference to be successful this year. And yes. Marshall looked really good last week, so I don't know that I'm going to pick them in that one.
Okay, but, well, that's fair.
You know what I mean? But that's looking ahead too far. Yeah. Our next game is, I think, one that was one of the better out-of-conference games we saw in all of college football last season. Mm-hmm. Now, that was a very limited spectrum of games we saw out of conference.
Right.
But it was a very good one. I don't know what it's going to look like at all this year, though. It's Tulsa at Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
Tulsa last year was obviously an excellent team that went to the conference championship. They should have beaten Oklahoma State, but they kind of blew it at the end of the game. I don't know if you're paying too much attention to that at the time, but it was very frustrating for those of us who kind of thought Tulsa stunk to start last year because that's what they had been. You know, in all fairness, though, Tulsa had like three straight years where 4 wins was their maxed out, like, right. mark. You know, no one saw them being as good as they were last year. Then when they flashed that against Oklahoma State, you kind of said, finish the job, though. Be back. Finish the job.
Yeah.
They couldn't. Now they go to Oklahoma State coming off a loss to UC Davis. Ooh. Oklahoma State, it should be pointed out, though, they did not look dominant in their game against Missouri State, another FCS team. They only won like 23-16, I want to say, off mm-hmm. the top of my head. So it's not like they were overly impressive either in week one.
Yeah.
How do you think Tulsa bounces back from what happened last week? What do they have to do?
This is tough. And I didn't realize this is called the Turnpike Classic.
Yeah, they play pretty much every year, these two.
Yeah, they have a very extensive history. When you go through the game notes that Tulsa released, they have all this, you know, only 72 miles separates the schools, and this is why it's called that. And 71st meeting between the two teams. Mm-hmm. So obviously this is something familiar for them. I'm not even actually sure who Oklahoma State beat. Oh, they beat Missouri State.
Yeah. That's
what you just said. Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby Petrino, I think, is the coach there now.
Oh, that's crazy. I haven't heard that name in a while. I don't know. It's one of those games, you know, that you're going to be playing a pretty powerful team going in, and you're coming off one of the worst games that you've probably had in a while.
Yeah,
that's all everybody's talking about. So I think it's a toss-up for them. Like, they could either come out and be rallied from that awful outing last game, or, you know, it's quicksand.
Or you
can, I don't really know either way it's gonna go.
You can act like UConn does after a tough loss and just curl up into a ball.
Yeah, I like to think they're not that team. They strike me as fighters, so I feel like they're going to come out and be pissed, which is how you should be after that. But mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, you're completely right. How they respond to the loss last week is going to dictate the rest of their, it's the rest of their season. Because again, I hate to look ahead past what we're doing right now, but they have to go to Ohio State in a week.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a loss. Let's just say it now. And if you start 0-3, that's just demoralizing. You know what I mean?
It's tough.
So they do,
especially coming from this team last year where they were ranked first or second in most defensive statistical categories. Mm-hmm. And it's not that their defense did bad.
Collins was the conference defensive player of the year. You know what I mean? Like, they were so good on defense last year, and they just, again, the rush defense wasn't terrible against UC Davis, but the pass defense was not there. It just wasn't. And I think
Yeah.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'll chime in.
This is a Mike Gundy coach team. They want to throw the ball when possible. They're obviously they have some balance, but they want to throw the ball. And if you can't stop that, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, I think they can't. Their defense is good. I think aside from this, and it's hard to be like, oh, I think they're good because of the game. But if you put this game aside and you look at what they're supposed to be, and they have a lot of senior leadership. That's the thing, is they've got these guys that are back. You know, they've returned 11 players from that team that was so good last year, and specifically like defensive linemen and stuff like that. So you have to imagine that those guys are going to be like, hey, we have to step up. And that kind of senior leadership is important when you're shaking off a loss like that. So I have to believe they're going to come out and try and knock Oklahoma State in the teeth away.
You absolutely have to come out swinging. You can't try to absorb Oklahoma State's initial first. I also think Tulsa needs to lean on its running game. I don't, as of right now, what I saw last week, I don't believe in Davis Brin. And I know that Seth Boomer, the backup, I do not believe in, because I've seen him before in games too, and he has never looked the part. It's a tough environment. Stillwater is not an easy place to go and play. You need to be able to control the game on the ground, probably kill some clock and shorten this game. Don't give them too many possessions.
This is the kind of game, though, Oklahoma State could be looking at that film last week, and they might underestimate this team.
Yes and no, though, because they played them last year and got punched in the mouth hard. And you know what I mean? So I don't think
they didn't lose, right?
No, but they were, it was like a 13-7 or something.
They haven't lost a game to Tulsa. Oklahoma State's won the last eight games.
Yeah, but the way last year's game went, they should have lost. And I think they know that.
Right, but they didn't. So statistically, the last win in the series came in 1998. So you have a team that has won so many in a row, sometimes they get a little comfortable. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
It's possible. I just think that it tends to happen after a 31-3 win, not after a dogfight. That's maybe what they had last year.
I don't think there's really a rhyme or reason to it, to be honest.
Fair enough. These are college kids at the end of the day.
College football does what it wants.
Do you think Tulsa's got it in them?
I mean, I think no, I'm going to pick Oklahoma State.
I tend to agree with you. I want them to do it. I would love it if they bounced back and prove that UC Davis was a fluke and that they're going to be a solid team in the conference this year. I don't buy it.
It would be epic, but probably
not. We're going to another team that's coming off a pretty rough week one. And it's frankly a pretty rough week one to two just off the field, what they have to deal with in their Twitter mentions too, because they're hearing it. Florida at USF. Bulls fans are not in a great place right now, but hey, you're about to get your indoor practice facility broken ground on. That's something.
Yes.
It's something that's a positive spin on, being left behind. Anyways.
I don't know that there's a lot to say about this game.
I think it'll be very interesting to see which quarterbacks play the most for both teams. And I say that because Florida's got its own little quarterback controversy. I know we know Emory Jones is going to be the starter. Mm-hmm. He ain't going to be the only quarterback that plays, though.
No.
Who does USF start? Do they stick with Cade Fortin, kind of? Or do they go, change it up? We still haven't seen Jaren Williams, the Miami transfer, at all at quarterback. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if they get to the third quarter and they still haven't scored yet this season, which I think is a very strong possibility because, of who they are in offense and who they're going up against.
Yeah.
There's going to be some major questions to answer because that would be, going on 6, 7, 8 quarters of possibly no points in a football season is insane. And I think it's very possible in this game.
Yeah, it 100% is. It's going to be, I love when it's in-state teams like this it'll be rough.
These are absolutely the types of games you want if you're an AAC team, someone from your state, the same as the Oklahoma State Tulsa game, same as South Carolina, ECU. You want someone from your region, someone close to you, someone where there's a lot of local interest and a lot of high school recruits will be looking at it. You know what I mean? And you can showcase yourself.
Jeff Scott went to Dabo Swinney after this and was like, hey, how should I proceed? Do you think he goes to Dabo for advice ever?
No, I'm sure they've got a good relationship still. Mm-hmm. I don't think Dabo's got the time to be telling him, all right, here's how you have to fix the entire USF.
But Dabo's such a nice guy, and he's such like a family first. I have to imagine.
Dabo has a place for him as co-offensive coordinator if he never needs it again, but I don't think that – I don't think Dabo has – I mean, running Clemson's a full-time job. I mean, full-time. He spends a lot of time with that. I don't think he's got time to – I'm sure he gives like
– I bet you know what? I'm going to ask. Like
little bits of it.
I'm going to ask because
I think little bits of advice, but I don't think he's giving in depth.
They keep
advice.
In more touch than you think. Like I've been told about several coaches group chats, where they check in on each other, and especially if they've coached together for a long time.
Of course, I do know about the Nick Saban, now head coach, former assistant group chat. Bizling Kiffin let slip that exists publicly.
Saban and Kiffin didn't exactly get along when they were at Alabama. I have some hilarious stories about that.
Yeah, they didn't get along, but they absolutely needed each other. Mm-hmm. It was a symbiotic relationship. So
were oil and water outside of the football field.
It's the funniest thing in the world. Like last year when Ole Miss put up like 50 points on Alabama, just watching Nick Saban have to stand there and watch it happen. It's hysterical.
Yeah,
I like Ole Miss this year. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the USF Bulls.
Do they have any
what position are they even remotely comparable to Florida?
That's a really good question.
I don't think there is one.
I'm not sure.
I think they're gonna have a very long, difficult day. Yeah. I think, and you know, they're talking about Raymond James Stadium being basically sold out. It's gonna be the Swamp part too. It's not gonna be Bulls fans. It's gonna be Gators
fans. It's just a bunch of Florida fans.
That's what the, you know, I mean, the state of Florida, you know, the Big Three as they are called, they are huge, and the Florida Gators are very big in that region. You know, obviously UCF is in Orlando. USF does have Tampa fans, and they do have fans throughout the state. But UF has a lot more. And, you know, the reality is this USF team, if they're playing, you know, FAU, say, another Florida team, that stadium is going to be all empty chairs. It's basically sold out because it's the Gators and because people are Gators fans. And it's a little bit of a cheaper ticket, easier to get ticket, frankly.
Yeah. 100%. And apparently this game, I mean, there's been reports and stuff talk about how it's going to be phased out because, you know, it's not, it doesn't bring any value for Florida, and the average fan outside of the state, like someone on my coast, is not really going to care that this is, you know, interesting to people in Florida.
I mean, it's interesting to fans of Florida, and it's interesting. If USF could have taken steps forward, it would have been very interesting to see a good AAC team from Florida play the Florida Gators. Same as, you know, UCF just scheduled a 2-for-1 series with Florida. Assuming UCF will still be good during those times, and they're going to be in the Big 12 for a couple of those games now. You know, those are interesting games. You know, when FAU or FIU plays UCF or USF, I think those are very interesting games. But yeah, no one in California cares. But
nobody in most parts of the country cares.
Who in Florida cares when San Jose State plays Cal, for instance?
Exactly. But I'm saying that they're going to phase these out. That's if you look at their schedules down the road, you don't see UF playing USF down, you know, these kind of matchups are going to be something of the past. UF
is also a bit of a coward in how it schedules, for what it's worth. They don't leave the state of Florida.
It's not worth it for them. I get it. It sucks, but it's not worth it.
Well, yeah, that's the tricky thing with all this scheduling. Now we're getting into the weeds a little bit here. If you're a Power 5 team, what value is there in playing a good G5 team ever? There's none. Because if you lose that good G5 team, your season is shot in the shin before you even get going. If you win, you did what you're supposed to do. There's value in playing other Power 5 teams because you can mark it as a Power 5 win. And there's value in playing teams that are just terrible because you know that you're going to crush them.
Right.
I mean, UCF shot itself in the foot for years with Danny White's mantra about scheduling, which I at the time was all for, but as an experiment clearly failed, because UCF has like no one on the schedule in the upcoming years.
Positive for the game has to be that they expect it to be the largest crowd since hosting FSU in 2016. So regardless of whether it's Florida fans or not, they're still going to get revenue and money from that. So good for the school for selling out the game and getting the money from the ticket sales, the concessions, whatever it is. So that's a positive for USF.
It is. I think if you're USF, the goal should be to figure out who your quarterback is in this game and stick with them for the rest of the season.
Yeah. I think if we see Jeff Scott improve on the things like you talked about in our recap, you know, you're talking about things that you didn't like about the coaching staff and how they just weren't
in-game decisions. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we see that improve, I would say that's a bit of a victory. I know that's a low bar, but at least that's trending in the right direction. So, but I'm still picking Florida.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's an easy pick. That's probably the easiest pick of the week. And we've got our next game is going to be just as easy, but we'll keep this next one quick. It's Murray State at Cincinnati. Cincinnati is going to crush them. This is a get your reps in for the week and get the backups in practice time against live action game. It is. I've got nothing to say about it other than Cincinnati by 50, you know?
Yeah.
Cincinnati should crush them.
Yeah. 100%. I'm picking Cincinnati. I'm sure you are. I have to say one of my things I'm really excited about for this game is what Desmond Ridder coined the offense. Did you see that?
No, I missed that.
It says, I'll read the quotes. As part of what we said to be on offense is, quote, code red, end quote, Ridder said. That's relentless, explosive, and disciplined. I felt we put that on display last weekend. That's what we like to see week in and week out. So I'm excited for some code red.
That explains part of my Twitter timeline to me because I saw Luke Fickell in the Cincinnati Bearcats, like Twitter accounts right after each other tweet, you know, hashtag code red.
Hashtag
this,
code
like,
red.
GIF, this like gift that just said code red. I was like, yeah, that makes no sense. Don't know what that means.
Now you know. That's what Absolutely. We're here on the podcast for. We are here to explain things like that.
We are learning things in lifetime.
Yes.
So code red. Yeah, quick and easy. We're both in Cincinnati. I think that we're wasting our breath to say anything more. Temple at Akron, I think, is a much more interesting game, though, because of where Temple's at as a program. It's too early in the year for me to say it's a must win, but it's kind of a must win.
Yeah.
You know, after the way that Temple lost last week and knowing that they're just talent-wise, experience-wise, towards the bottom of the conference, yeah, you get to play USF and Navy, who are both awful, awful this year. Mm-hmm. But you just need to get these wins now, especially if you're going to try to have something to build on going into conference play.
Mm-hmm.
And Akron's not a good team. Let's just be honest with it. They're towards the bottom of the MAC. That's someone that anyone in the AAC should beat. I know that you have some good relationships with the coaching staff at Temple. Do you know anything about how they feel about this game going into it?
I haven't, you know, after that weekend, I haven't really caught up with my Temple.
I'm sure they're busy.
I didn't even try. I was like, I'm going to listen out. But here's what I'm looking for this weekend. Temple has won their last five matchups against the Zips, outscoring Akron 178-46 in that span. So there's a positive. Wide receiver Jaden Blue is 14 receiving yards away from 1,500 all time. So if he can get 14 receiving yards, then there's a record set. So that's great for him. And lastly, if quarterback DeJuan Mathis is unable to start, which I'm guessing is the case.
About to talk about how, like, I couldn't find anything on their injury stuff.
I have to imagine if he was on crutches, it's not likely, but I will check in with their offensive coordinator and see if I can find anything out. Yeah. But if he doesn't start, this would mark the fifth straight game that Temple has started a different quarterback and the sixth game out of the last seven.
So I mean, that's not great.
These are interesting things to look for in this game. And there's a lot of adversity for Temple to overcome. I mean, there is no shortage of things the world is throwing at them to try and test their moxie and their resilience. And I would love to see them just come out in this game and just get a moral victory, like an emotional and a mental and a physical, all kinds of victories.
No, absolutely. I think that they've got a good shot. Like you said, there's issues there in terms of the health right now. You mentioned DeJuan Mathis. David Martin Robinson, the tight end, also got banged up against Rutgers. I don't know what his status is at this point, because again,
we'll have to check. Yeah.
Again, Temple's just keeping that close to the vest right now, which is, you know, that happens a lot in college football. They've got no obligation to tell us, since, you know, student athletes' health. I'm not going to pick on them for not making that more apparent or out there. But, you know, but those are two of the really key players on offense. What we need to see from them on offense, though, no matter who the quarterback is the offensive line step up and be a physical force. It's okay if you make a couple mental mistakes. Those happen. It's not okay to get blown back consistently. And that's, unfortunately, against Rutgers, it's what kept happening. It got, you know, DeJuan Mathis killed back there, quite literally killed back there.
Yeah.
You know, because he was just getting hit so often. He didn't have time to really go through his progressions. He didn't have time to set his feet and make an accurate throw, and it affected him all game.
Yeah.
You know, Mathis is a quarterback. I'm going to stick staying with Mathis until we hear for sure he's not playing for right now, just because he is the starter there. And I know that Rod Carey and company are sticking with him going forward because, you know, they are. He is a guy who needs the opportunity to develop and grow in games. He doesn't have a lot of live game experience. There's a lot of talk because he did go to Georgia for a while, and he did play in Georgia, and he didn't play particularly well when he got the chance against Florida last year. He didn't look all that good against Rutgers either, but I don't know that it was his fault when the whole time he's on his back. The same thing that happened to Jordan Travis, the Florida State quarterback against Notre Dame. You can say he was bad, and that is true, but it's really hard to develop as a player in live action when the whole time you're getting run down.
Yeah. You know?
So that's why I want to see more than anything against an Akron defensive line that you should be better than. You should be bigger than. You should be stronger than. I want them to show that they can do that.
Yep. Shout out to Rich Berg, their SID, for his mention of the great band, The Script, in his game notes. Love a good Hall of Fame mention. And then my last note on them is a fun fact for Temple fans. Temple is the only school in the country that can claim two of its former head coaches are now running NFL teams. Can you name those coaches?
Matt Rhule for sure.
Yes.
And then running NFL teams, former head coach.
So, yeah, head coach.
I'm trying to go through the ones that I know for sure. I mean, Al Golden, Steve Adazio, they're not in the NFL. Like, they're not. You had Jeff Collins. He's at Georgia Tech.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Tom Brady.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Oh, Bruce Arians.
Mm-hmm.
He was the coach way back in like the 80s, right?
Yep. He manned the helm for the Owls from 1983 to 1988, while Rhule was obviously more recent coaching from 2013 to 2016. So,
do you want to get distracted really quickly with the Virginia Tech, or I guess with the Bruce Arians fun fact? Do you know who the top two leading rushers all time as a quarterback are at Virginia Tech?
I don't think I could tell you.
Michael Vick and Bruce Arians. Which is the silliest combo you could have ever come up with.
Yeah, me, but I would not have guessed that. So,
yep. Now we've got all our Bruce Arians talk.
Yeah, there we go. Fun Temple facts. All right, next game.
Awesome. Pick that game.
Yeah, I bet pick Temple.
I agree. Got to beat Akron. We're pretty similar so far. It looks like
we're gonna
not letting you keep up. This is how I'm gonna. I got my lead.
I'm gonna have to pick something. Season. Yeah, I'm gonna have to pick something different to.
But you're gonna. What you're going to need is for me to pick first, because I can just follow you all season like this.
You won't. Not if I pick out outlandishly, then you won't.
Well, if I'm trying to protect my lead.
Yeah, but you got to pick big sometimes to win big. So, all right. What's
really
next?
Interesting game. So it's the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy game between Air Force at Navy. It's happening on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. I'm sure there's going to be a ton to do with that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have a ton to add to the fact that that is it. I was in kindergarten when 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
I've got very few memories. I don't think it's my place to talk about it beyond the fact that I don't think it's any surprise they scheduled this game for 9/11.
It's going to be incredible though.
It's going to be a huge showing. I think that for this game, what I need to see out of Navy is offensive. It's similar to Temple. I need the offensive line to be a lot better. I want you to stick with Xavier Arline at quarterback because he is the best running option you have. A proper Navy team doesn't need the best throwing option, needs the best running option first and figure out the passing game later. He is by far the most athletic running quarterback they have. So I want them to stick with him, and I want the offensive line to show it's, capable of doing the things the Navy offensive line is doing that triple option, which is mostly cut block. And when they go back to pass and just hold your own for a kind of a 2-second click. These two teams hate each other more than Air Force and Navy hate each other more than Navy and Army do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that, but there's legitimate hatred between how they recruit one, like each other's players and things like that.
I did not.
Yeah. There's a lot of disdain between these two teams. I'm very excited for this game, actually.
I think it's going to be good for Navy. They had 8 different players, including 3 of the offensive line, like you said, make their first career start. So that's obviously a big concern, especially against a good team like Marshall. So you're going to get a little more stability, hopefully, as they get more comfortable each game in the season. But like, I agree with everything you said, it needs to be better. You need to see more. You need to see the mistakes. I mean, they've got to stop the sacks. Like, they just have to. Throw your body in front of somebody. I don't care.
If you're Navy, you want to be in a position where you don't have to throw more than 2-3 times a game to begin with. So, if you are in those spots, you can't just give up another sack. And you can't let the game get so far away from you where you have to throw if you're Navy, because you're not capable of it. But Air Force is also not the type of team that typically pulls away from other teams. They're built similarly to Navy in a lot of ways.
That's true.
This isn't going to be one of those games where Navy walks in at a talent disadvantage, at least.
Right.
And
I like, fun fact, Air Force football is honoring the B-52 Stratofortress with their 2021 edition of the Air Power Legacy Series uniform in this game.
And we're getting some unique uniforms in this game.
Yeah.
I know Navy always breaks out all the steps for the Army game and vice versa. So I'm excited to see what if they've got their own thing here. Because do you remember the Blue Angels helmets that they had a few years
yes,
ago?
Yes, love that.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely love it.
Love all those. Do you think that Navy can bounce back this week?
I am going to pick Navy because I think the first game was so tough, and to play against Marshall, who is extremely talented, it's a very hard way to work out some kinks. But I think they're going to come into this one, like you said, better matched up, more similar schemes in this Air Force team. So I think it's going to go better for Navy this game. So I'm going to pick them to win.
Okay, so I'm looking at the rest of the games we have. I don't think there's going to be another game where we disagree. So
I don't know. We'll have to see.
For the sake of disagreement, mm-hmm. I'm going to take Air Force.
Are you going to take Air Force?
Okay. I'll take Air Force. I think that I want to see Navy do the things that I thought they could do coming into the year and take a little step forward with that. Didn't see them at all against Marshall. I want to start seeing them this game first before I start picking them again. Rooting for Navy, certainly. You know, home game for Navy, that could help. But I think Air Force and for the time being.
Fun fact that this is the earliest the two schools have ever met in the season. So.
Oh, yeah. Tell me that this isn't just getting it on a certain date.
I mean, of course, but I love that. I love when there's new traditions created like this. And they're going to do a lot of very, very, there's so many connections between the players and that specific date. And I'm going to write a little bit about that in my weekly column, Out of Bounds, to talk about, you know, what's going on off the field. So definitely look for that, but there's a lot of unique connections between these players and the specific date and time. So it's very, very meaningful. It's more than football, which I love.
Yeah. It's going to be a great atmosphere there. Absolutely. Yeah. And we're going to move on to a team that desperately, desperately needs to win this game. Yeah. And that's Houston at Rice. Dana needs a win, baby.
well, so far he hasn't said anything demeaning about Rice. So he should be okay as long as he makes no weird comments or things he shouldn't be saying.
He'll come up with something, I'm sure.
You're like, he'll find a way.
You know, Rice is kind of built in that Stanford model of team, which makes some sense because they're both really academically sound institutions that expect that academic standard to be withheld within the football program too, which obviously limits your recruiting ability. So they tried to model themselves after Stanford. I don't know that it's working out perfectly because Stanford at the very least has more access to great players by virtue of being a Pac-12 school. You know,
I love Mike Bloomgren.
I like him too. I'm not knocking him necessarily. It's just harder to get player, like where Stanford thrives is they can get a Davis Mills at quarterback every now and again. They can get a Christian McCaffrey at running back because they're in the Pac-12 still. I think those are very important aspects. And once they got it going, people look at a good winning school as a good winning program that can get them to the next level.
You know, for Rice Stanford though, if going. Christian McCaffrey went to Stanford because his parents went to Stanford. So it was less about the Pac-12 and more about Stanford. And that's a lot of the athletes that go there are because parents went there, family went there, and because it's an incredibly challenging academic school.
And the academics is a large part of it for me as to why there's similarities between the two.
Yeah.
You know, it's just my point, though, in general, is just it's harder to get athletes to compete when you're in Conference USA than when you're in the Pac-12. That's more what I was getting at.
It's funny because the Pac-12 complains about that, too. They say it's harder to get people to come to the Pac-12.
Well, yeah, but they're comparing themselves to a different standard. You know, they're comparing themselves to getting a guy to go play at Clemson versus getting a guy to play at SC.
And Stanford says it's hard to get guys to come to play that have the grades.
That's a complaint that everyone who requires that has. Notre Dame has that complaint. Vanderbilt has that complaint. You know, Tulane, Rice, you know, Duke, any of these schools that really do put emphasis on it. Still, it's a challenge.
Yeah, it is hard.
You know, and that's where Rice has kind of been since this, well, forever now, basically.
Yeah.
But especially since the Southwestern Conference folded. Houston, they need to figure out some way to get Clayton Tune to play mistake-free football in this game. Unfortunately, what happened last week was he just kept forcing the ball in and trying to do too much with too little. And I think at some point he needs to understand the importance of the check down. Where's your check down? Find the check down. Or is there a lane to scramble? Or even just throw it away. Not everything has to be a home run ball. If it isn't there, it's better to, you know, play the next down than to lose it here. Right. And it's just something that hasn't gotten through to him yet. And that was clear last week. We talked a little bit on the last pod about the comments that Dana made about his offensive line. Well, here's a great opportunity for the offensive line to take that, not as a demeaning thing necessarily, but try to respond
a
and
challenge.
Say, exactly, yeah. Look how strong we actually are against a team that you are physically stronger than,
Yeah.
So those are the things I'm really looking for on the offensive side of the ball. The defensive side of the ball, I didn't think the defense played bad against Texas Tech, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think they just got put in a really tough situation throughout the second half. I'd like to see them maybe be a little bit more consistent and cohesive, but I thought they were pretty good overall. I don't have a ton of issues with what they put on the field there. The other thing, which is, again, goes back to the Texas Tech game, Dana and his staff did not adjust nearly as well at the half as Tech staff, Matt Wells and company, did. I want to make sure that he makes the better adjustments in this game at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And that those are the things I want to see out of Houston in this game. What do you have?
I think one of the things I didn't realize is all these games have names. This one's called the Bayou Bucket.
Yeah.
The Bayou Bucket Classic. So
yeah, this is an old Southwest Conference game.
Love that. So they'll be, 43rd all-time meeting and 40th to decide possession of the Bayou Bucket. So excited to see that. And then they'll also be doing a special 9/11 tribute. They're going to commemorate the day with special uniforms. Both teams will wear their home uniforms to feature red, white, and blue color scheme. Okay. And they will have 9/11 memorial decals on their helmets. So
I think this is not even about the celebration, which... Great. I like it. I think more teams should both wear their home uniforms at the same time, as long as the colors don't clash. Because like the US.
Well, we saw that last night. Ole Miss, Louisville.
Yep. And then Tulane, Oklahoma did it.
Mm-hmm.
USC, UCLA always do it. I think it looks really good when the colors match up, right?
Tough with teams like Oregon who go so crazy with all their uniform combos. It's like,
if you get like Arizona playing Cal, it's kind of tough because they're both wearing navy at that point,
True.
So you can't always do it, but when you get a nice red versus navy, I think that works.
Yeah.
This game itself, though, I've got Houston winning.
Yeah, it's same.
Absolutely. I'm gonna go Houston. And they need to win this game because, that was not the start Dana needed after a couple weird years is the way I'll describe his first 2 years.
I think this first year, the first game is going to be a distant memory as they face Rice, Grambling, Navy, and then possibly a little difficulty at Tulsa at Tulane. But I think they get a nice couple slate here to kind of cleanse everybody's palates.
That's true. But then look at the end of the season, because it's going to get just as hard at the back end. And you don't want what people remember you as is the coach who lost three.
I don't know. I don't see too many games that they have at Temple at the end. They end with UConn. So.
Okay. Well, in the middle, then, as I know, that
so I'm like Tulane, ECU, SMU. Okay. That's not necessarily easy, but I think the Houston ECU game would be a good game. It's going to be a battle. So.
Well, hopefully you're right then, because I think I mentioned it last time. I'm not trying to root for anyone to lose their jobs, necessarily. Like, it's part of the sport, though. And right now, Dana's seat is hot. We're going to move on now to another quick one to talk about, I think. It's Bethune-Cookman at UCF. What do I want to see out of this game?
What would you like to see out of this game?
I'd like to see Dylan Gabriel be a little bit more consistent with his placement on some throws. I'd like, in general, though, the team to just keep doing what they did in the second half against Boise State. You know what I mean? Just take a week against a lesser opponent and, get the live action reps in, because that's awesome. What this is.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else for it though.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, but it's a way for them to take what struggled at Boise or with against Boise State in that first half. That was rough, and work on those things so that they can come out and not be a target like that, because you don't want to be that team that teams know they can come out strong against and will struggle. So I hope they work on that stuff.
Exactly. I think I mentioned it last time, Dylan Gabriel doesn't throw the interception, which is a terribly placed ball. It's a whole different world of a game that we are looking at against Boise State. So
we don't deal in what ifs in this podcast. So
I clearly do.
Hopefully he can go out and not throw an interception in this game.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like when you get into that situation where you can throw a ball one way and gets picked, or one way and it's a touchdown, throw it the right way this time. Put the air on it.
Let's see that. Yeah.
just like clean up those little mistakes against the team that, you know, you should be pretty handily. That's it. This next game is a pretty interesting one. I think it's Memphis at Arkansas State.
I actually really like Arkansas State. They were one of my favorite teams to watch.
Lane Hatcher, their quarterback last week, he looked really, really good. And I think that's going to be an immediate test for that secondary at Memphis to let's see what you do against a quarterback who last week was 12 for 12 for 150 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see what that looks like. You know, is this an Arkansas State team that can throw on you a little bit? Is that defense, it's their first real test to go up against. And I think that's exciting to get to go see. I'm also interested to see what is going on at quarterback. Is Grant Gunnell going to be available this week? Mm-hmm. We really didn't know he wasn't going to be available until like the last second last week.
Yeah.
What do we think of Arkansas State as a team though?
I love the Red Wolves. They're efficient on offense. They can score points in bunches. Defense is actually, they're very similar to Memphis. If you line them up, they both like to score like that. Defense hasn't always been the first priority for the teams. And I feel like it's going to be a really fun. Arkansas State was fun to watch last year, just in the way that they score and mm-hmm. how often they do it. And I think Memphis has a very similar mentality. So not a whole lot of defense in this game, but it's going to be fun to watch all the touchdowns. So,
yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm interested with the quarterback situation at Memphis just because no one thought Seth Hennigan was going to start week one.
Yeah.
And it was due to injury. It wasn't like it was this big thing, but he looked good week one too. It wasn't like he went in there and he was a bum or anything. You know what I mean? So I'll be interested to see all those things about Memphis that looked really good last week. Like, you know, the running game, which ran for like 250-ish yards against Nicholls State. Mm-hmm. Can you still put up a big day on the ground like that against, you know, against an FBS team? All these are, I think, questions we're learning about Memphis still. I think Memphis wins this game. I think they're the more talented team just naturally.
Okay.
I do think it's a close game. I think Arkansas State's a well-coached team, and I think that they're going to put up a bunch of points. But Memphis.
Yeah, they are. I think the over-under is 64.5, or at least when I checked. And the over-under is something I do understand. And I would definitely take the over in this game because I think it's going to be like 80.
I absolutely think it's going to be one of those scoring games too. I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, but I'm going to take Arkansas State.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Told you. I'm full of surprises.
Okay. Well, I got Memphis because I love this conference properly.
Love Memphis too, but I got really attached to the Red Wolves last year, and I think they're fun.
I heard way too much all offseason from Memphis fans that I was just counting them out and, you know, hated Memphis.
Oh, no. So you kind of have to be.
Well, no, yeah. Because I said I think they're a step back overall in the conference this year because I do believe that if you compare them to UCF, Cincinnati, SMU, I believe they're in that second tier of teams, not that first tier. That's all. That's all okay. I ever said, Memphis fans. I never said.
Well, here you go. You're picking them to win. So.
Yep. Absolutely. Our next game is mm-hmm. Morgan State at Tulane. Morgan State Tulane, that was supposed to be at Yulman Stadium. Again, can't happen. They're getting moved, I believe, to Alabama.
Birmingham. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Legion Field. It is an FCS game. You should win it after that performance against Oklahoma. You can't have a hangover, though.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, you know, things are really weird for that Tulane program right now still.
Yeah.
It's not going to get the same attention or love or energy that last week got, but it's still just as weird. It's still just as much time away from home. It's still just mm-hmm. as much time dealing with the aftermath of a hurricane in, you know, going through your community. None of that is easy. You know, don't let yourself get complacent following a really good performance against Oklahoma. Don't let yourself think that, oh, we just nearly beat Oklahoma in Oklahoma. We can go do whatever we want to these guys because, you know, you could, you're not going to get surprised, but you could get surprised.
Well, didn't Morgan State get shut out by?
I can double check that.
Towson. I'm pretty sure that they were shut out 31-0 by Towson. Towson, T-O-W-S-O-N.
Yes, Towson shut them out 31-0.
Yeah, so when you're looking at that and you're heading into this game.
Wait, really quickly. They played mm-hmm. three quarterbacks, Morgan State did. Mm-hmm. Their best quarterback was 3 for 9 with 68 yards. Swallowed by the guy went 2 for 9 for 4 yards, then 1 for 3 with 7 yards. So, no.
They're dealing with some things.
They're
they got to work out. Yeah.
I'll freely admit, I'll say right now, I'm not a Morgan State football expert. You know?
No, of course not. And how could you be? You know, it is a very niche program. But that being said, my only issue with Tulane this week is going to be injuries. We mm-hmm. saw a couple guys take very hard hits in the Oklahoma game, specifically really Michael game. Pratt. I was told that he cleared concussion protocol and that he would be fine, but I know they're going to be watching him. I know a couple other guys were being looked at for concussion. I'm not going to say names or anything, but mm-hmm. I'm going to be curious to see what it looks like when they get everyone out on the field. So that being said, they're fast. They play well. The defense was incredible against Oklahoma. I don't think there's going to be a lag or any hangover at all.
No, absolutely. So. They're a very, very well-coached program. When I was saying that, I wasn't predicting it, just saying you have to avoid it. No,
you should look out for it, but I don't think that this program particularly has to look out for it. And I do believe this will be their last game away from home after this one. I think I'm being told that they will be able to go back to
Because they've got UAB supposed to play in New Orleans at some point this year. In September, obviously.
Yeah.
So they will be able to get back there for that. That's
I was told that's really good
because, you know, they've been basically
they've been away for a while. Yeah. It's hard for the kids to be away that long and everything. And they're rolling with it, but it's not easy. But I was told that they think this would be the last week they would be gone, so that the next week they would hopefully be able to go home.
That'll be good because they do need that. But yeah, no. Morgan
so
State
you're picking is, Tulane.
Yeah, Morgan State's not a team that should compete with Tulane. Don't get hungover. Get the stars out by the second half.
Drink some Pedialyte and get
stay get hydrated. we've
hey,
got
last
one,
game.
Yeah, one more game. It's North Texas at SMU. Another one of those games that you like because it's a regional game.
Yes, I love these ones. They're so fun.
This is a game that I wish it was the same North Texas team from like 3 years ago when when it was Graham Harrell and Mason Fine, the OC.
I love Mason Fine.
He was so much fun to watch. Those North Texas teams were very good and had a lot of people's respect. And, you know, Seth Luttrell was supposed to be the next big thing at head coach. And he just never really found the job he wanted or never got that offer that he was looking for.
Yeah.
It's kind of fallen apart a little bit at North Texas for him right now because the team's taken a couple steps back. I still believe in their offense as being an effective offense, but they're not the same kind of scary Conference USA team they used to be. You know, they're certainly not competing at the top of Conference USA like they were, you know, just 3-4 years ago, like I said. I think for SMU, this game's going to be about making sure that last week's dominance was not just an FCS win. This is about kind of building on that and building up as you kind of play a little bit higher level competition before getting to even higher level competition next week, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to discredit North Texas entirely, but I also don't believe that they've got the just the talent to hang with SMU necessarily.
Yeah, this is a game where I would want to pick North Texas because they've always been that team, that little fighter team that could upset people because they're gritty and they're tough. And they honestly have one of the best strength training coaches I've ever interviewed and seen do work. I mean, he's incredible. If he's still there, I would have to check, but they also did not move the needle in their first game. And they have major concerns at quarterback, which when you line up next to a team like SMU, where their quarterback's Tanner Mordecai is just slanging records left and right.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough day. So I'm going to have to go SMU, even though I want to pick in my heart, North Texas.
Yeah. I can't do it. I like SMU here by a lot, to be honest. Yeah. I think it is good to get that kind of building block game in. It's kind of a second building block game. They've got La Tech next week, SMU does, then TCU. So, you know, each one of these games feels like a stepping stone to a slightly harder game, to a slightly harder game as they work their way into conference play. What you really want to see here is the defense stay dominant, though. I don't think anyone has any concerns about Tanner Mordecai. I think everyone still has that kind of thought, like, what is the defense really? So it'll be interesting to find that out.
North Texas allows so many points per game, especially, you know, within the last 2 years. It's just been really frustrating.
They're not going to be able to keep up with SMU. Even if they have a pretty good day on offense, they can't keep up with SMU.
So
there we have it.
Pony up.
Only two picks we diverged. I took Air Force over Navy. You took Arkansas State over Memphis.
Just to keep it interesting.
Yeah, change it up a little bit. Everything else we're all the same on. So it'll be tight next week what our scores are. But I think I've got it. 11-0 once again.
We'll see.
The perfect 11-0. No, absolutely. Do you have anything else for us before we wrap up on the conference? Anything fun?
No, I think, well, you're going to have to wait for the Out of Bounds column tomorrow or Thursday, whenever I get it together, and see what you can expect outside of the field. But other than that, it's just, it seems like a pretty straightforward week for the AAC. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Let's hope so.
Yes, let's hope so. Yeah. So you can find me at Dan_Morrison96. I'm going to mess up one more time. So you just take it away. What's your Twitter handle?
You can find me at MLM, E-M-I-L-N-E-M.
All right. And we are off.
See you next time.